Welcome to another episode of Well, This Isn't Normal. I'm Sarah Benincasa, and today my guest is Lori Gottlieb, and she is an author, an acclaimed author, actually, now, and she is also a therapist. It was really wonderful to talk to her. It was really, really helpful, and I hope that it's of help to you all, too. So let's jump right into it. Everybody, I'm here with Lori Gottlieb, psychotherapist and author of Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. I am very excited to have her on the podcast for a number of reasons. And one of which, of course, is that her book has been incredibly well reviewed. I got a copy of it, which was super, super duper exciting for moi. I felt very special. And I'm so thrilled to be talking to you right now. Thank you for doing Well, This Isn't Normal, Lori.
Yeah, well, it's my pleasure to have this conversation. I think we need them.
It's not a normal time. And I just found out that you lost your father a week ago. I'm so terribly sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I was reading, and this actually plays into our discussion very much. So I was reading the other day, and I think I might have spoken about it on an earlier podcast episode, doing the Monday through Friday. Sometimes I forget when I've brought what up. But I was reading about a gentleman who passed away, and in his case, it was due to coronavirus in Israel, and he was their first victim of coronavirus, and he was a Holocaust survivor. And his children spoke on a conference call with the Los Angeles Times about him and their love for him and how difficult it is to only one of the children was allowed to be at the funeral, and he had to wear a hazmat suit. And they made an exception to the rule, I think, because he was the first person who died from coronavirus in the country, and also because he was a Holocaust survivor. They wanted to honor him in a specific way, but everybody was sprayed down, and they can't sit Shiva. And I think that your family also, you were sharing earlier, is not permitted, or you can't sit Shiva for your dad. What is, well, first of all, for people who don't know what Shiva is, can you tell us what Shiva is? And second of all, how is that affecting the grieving process?
Yeah, so Shiva is a period of mourning in Jewish tradition where people come over and sit with you and be with you and help you to go through your process of grieving and loss. And it's very weird to do that on FaceTime with people. It's very weird not to have people face-to-face in the room with you, hugging you. So, you know, I think what's happening right now is with the coronavirus, we're all experiencing a collective loss. And I just wrote a piece for the New York Times about how there's no hierarchy of grief. That I think, you know, some people are missing graduations, some kids are missing seeing their friends, you know, weddings have been canceled. And then on the other end of the spectrum, people are dying or very ill or they've lost their jobs. But I think that we need to acknowledge all of these losses, that if we kind of feel like, well, my loss isn't that important, my loss isn't valid, those feelings will come out in other really maladaptive ways, like a short-temperedness, which is no good in close quarters, or eating too much or eating too little or sleeping too much or sleeping too little, or depression or exacerbated anxiety. So, you know, I think that as we talk about the individual losses that people have, I think that we have to remember that we are all losing something right now.
As a therapist in private practice, I am fascinated by I'm fascinated by boundary setting, the boundary setting that the therapists have to do. And I was talking to my own therapist who specializes in addiction and looks at it in terms of family systems and as a family disease. And I was laughing with her the other day on our weekly session. And I said, you have two dogs. Why was I not informed? And I said, you're an excellent therapist. I know very little about, or nothing at all about your personal life, but now I know you have two dogs. I'm very excited. And she said, you know, during this time, the enjoyable thing about the very slight softening of the boundaries is that we do get to see, this is the house plant that my provider has. This is the cat that is literally walking across the keyboard in my client's house during this discussion. And I'm wondering, on a more serious note for you, how does a therapist, how do you as a therapist manage seeing clients going through grief, something so extraordinary and yet painfully ordinary as the loss of a parent, and being a human who's dealing with this shit too? I used to wonder that right after 9/11, I was living in Boston, and I had a lot of friends in New Jersey and New York, and I would wonder, how do mental health providers manage their own fear and grief while maintaining appropriate boundaries with clients?
Yeah, that's such a great question. The thing is that we are going through something very similar, but we're managing it the way that we try to help them manage it, but without them present, obviously. So, you know, I talk a lot to my clients about the difference between productive and unproductive anxiety. So productive anxiety is you want to be concerned about this virus, because if you weren't concerned, you wouldn't be washing your hands, you wouldn't be social distancing, you wouldn't be reaching out to that person in your family or a friend or a neighbor who might be lonely and giving them a call. That's a productive use of our anxiety. An unproductive use of our anxiety is that obsessive rumination, like checking the latest coronavirus headline every 15 minutes, kind of futurizing or catastrophizing about what might or might not happen in the future, when we don't know what's going to happen later. But we do know what's happening right now in the present, and we have to make the best choice we can make in the present about how we want to spend our time. And so that's where this concept of both and comes in. And I use this in my own life, and I talk to my clients about it, which is that my son is home from school right now doing remote learning. And the first week, I remember seeing him there during the day, and it was so unusual because I don't really see him that much. He's 14, and he's usually gone with school and activities, and I don't see him till dinner time. And so I walked past his remote classroom, i.e. his beanbag chair in the den, and you know, and I said, "It's so nice to see you." And it really was, even though the circumstances are horrible under which I'm seeing him. And so that's where the both and comes in. So how do we manage as therapists is that we do the same things that we are asking our clients to do. Because it's one thing to know what helps, and it's another thing to be able to put it into practice. And it really requires some effort. But once you put in the effort and you kind of shift your perspective, the more manageable this very terrible situation becomes.
What are some ways in which you are taking care of yourself right now? I don't ask that question in order to be intrusive, but because I've been asking it of most of the guests I've had on the podcast, because I think that people are doing things right now that can be instructive for others. And my hope is that this podcast and these conversations will live on and continue to have relevance when we are all out and about again, and when the coronavirus becomes a memory. So I don't think of this as a coronavirus podcast. I think of it as a self-help and anti-anxiety, reducing mental health stigma, et cetera, a mental health awareness podcast. So I'm wondering if there are specific things that you're doing to engage in self-care now, and maybe there are things that you generally do in ordinary times as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I think is always important in any time is protecting our psychological immune systems. We spend so much time, even in non-corona times, protecting our physical immune system, right? We're always like, okay, if something feels off, I'm going to go to the doctor, I'm going to do preventative medicine, I'm going to eat well, I'm going to exercise, whatever it is that we try to do. But we don't think about our psychological immune system. And so now is a really good time for people who don't already have that practice in their lives to start doing that. And so that's, again, where the both and comes in, which is, for example, I tweeted out something where I said, if I can't touch my face soon, I might need to go to therapy. And a lot of people thought that was funny, and because we're going through this communal universal experience. But one person tweeted back, not funny. And I think that we need to sometimes have the normalcy in our lives, even when we're going through difficult times, that humor can be a balm for many of us. And we need to have room for our souls to breathe always, but especially now. And so, you know, I'm not saying that there's anything remotely funny about the coronavirus itself, but what we're doing as humans is kind of, you know, it's very unusual. And I think that if we, you know, so many people are laughing about like, oh my God, I have the happy birthday song going through my head when I try to fall asleep at night because, you know, I've been singing it all day when I'm washing my hands. Or, you know, there are all these like really, somebody just interviewed me for a piece that he's doing about the dad memes that are going around. Because I think men especially don't talk about their feelings.
We don't really do that with boys, do we?
Right.
We say, buck up, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We may not overtly say boys don't cry, but we expect that they will not.
Let me tell you two things about that. One is that I do a lot of couples therapy, and if I'm seeing a heterosexual couple, and I'll see something that goes like this. A woman will say to her husband, I really want to understand your inner life. I really want you to open up to me. I really want you to be vulnerable with me. I feel like I really need to connect with you that way. And then he does. And let's say he starts crying. She looks at me like a deer in headlights. And she's kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? And she tries to get him to stop crying. So it's really interesting, the discomfort that we have around men being vulnerable. And so what happens is men come into my practice and they'll say to me, I've never told anyone this before. And then I sit back and I wait to hear what it's going to be. And usually it's so mild. And I felt so much compassion for them. I think, really? There's no one in the world that he couldn't tell this to, even if he has close friends or a partner or whatever. Women will come in and they'll say, I've never told anyone this before, except for my mother, my sister, and my best friend, right? So they've told maybe one to three people. So I think that while we're going through this time, men, especially these dad memes that are going around, that makes them feel so seen and heard, like, yes, I am going through this too. Because we don't give them permission to talk about the loss and the struggle and the anxiety that they too are feeling right now.
Sometimes that sounds very strange to say. I mean, I am a bisexual, cisgender, white woman who walks with a lot of privilege. So saying all of that as a caveat, sometimes I feel sorry for cis men, whether they're gay, straight, bi, whatever it is. Sometimes I feel sorry for them. And the reason is that I was raised to have women friends and to talk to them about emotions. And now, the girls can be vicious to each other. Men can be as well. People without gender can be vicious to each other. However, I was raised knowing and being encouraged to talk to your girlfriends. Women will bond over things like, I've laughed with girlfriends over this several times, about like, what happens when you're in line for the restroom, for the women's room, and another woman in there is crying and people just like are ready. Girls are like, hey girl, you okay? What's going on? Like, and sometimes, you know, it's like, he's trash, break up with him is the answer. But sometimes it's just, oh, your mom said some mean stuff to you. Let me tell you what my mom said. Do you want to borrow my lipstick? Not now, not in the time of coronavirus. But you know what I'm saying? Like there is, it's so common to talk about real stuff and feel better and make eye contact and say, oh, I've been there. Like you see that. And you also see that in different cultural groups of women who have different coping mechanisms and things to say and kind of traditions that are specific to those cultural groups. It's really beautiful. And then I think about guys and how we teach boys to be and how we expect men to be. And I've been that woman who wanted her man to talk more and to share more feelings. And then when he did, I became like, what the fuck do I do with this? Like terrified. Like,
you start to feel somehow the word that comes up a lot in couples therapy is that she feels unsafe. And I think that's so interesting because I think it's safer to be in a relationship with somebody where each person can be themselves and show up. And you know, I think that their vulnerability is a strength. There's so much trust in that relationship when people can be vulnerable with each other. But because of this cultural conditioning, a lot of women will say, wow, I felt really unsafe. Like I'm the one who gets to do that. And he's the one who, you know, is sort of the rock.
Like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm going through something. I'm the one who gets to have the tears. You have to be the rock. And it's really fascinating. I mean, I've been single for, oh gosh, I would say mostly single, you know, dated here and there, but mostly single for 4 years now. And I, you know, became sober during that time. And so doing the work of recovery in my 12-step group and working with a therapist and everything during just really the past, like, say, year and a half of that time period has been fascinating for a lot of reasons, but it really has made me look back at my reactions in past relationships and realize, wow, I decided somebody else was the villain. I had cast them in a role they didn't even audition for and expected them to play a specific part that I had written for them. And it's been a really instructive time for me personally, but also now as some of those people start to reach out to check in, people make jokes about their exes checking in online. I did, you know, in advance of anyone doing it. But when it actually has happened, it's been very thoughtful and very kind and has opened up some really special conversations about how we deal with stress. And so in this way, I think that some people are perhaps more willing to show their vulnerability, and maybe some people like me have become more willing to accept it. And I'm wondering if you have experienced anything during this time personally or professionally where you've seen a gentleness emerge or a tenderness emerge that perhaps you hadn't seen before or that perhaps you've found encouraging.
Yeah. So I think that it's really important for us to focus not just on the loss that we're all experiencing, but to also be able to acknowledge the gains. And I don't mean just now in the present, but I think the gains that we're going to carry with us as we emerge from this pandemic. And one of them that I see is this resurgence of kindness in a culture that had been so incredibly uncivil, where people are reaching out to one another in a very caring way. People are checking on people who are alone or elderly. People are trying to support people either by delivering things or having things delivered to them or just FaceTiming with them. When people say, how are you? They actually want to hear the answer and they're actually listening and paying attention and not multitasking and distracted. And I think that we're being kinder to ourselves too, that I think self-compassion breeds compassion for others. So I think that's one of the gains. And I think the other gain that is so important to look at is resilience. that we are showing ourselves and each other how resilient we can be in the face of uncertainty and chaos. We have come up with so many creative ways to connect, to, you know, we've created playlists for each other. We're suggesting books to one another. We're connecting and doing like Zoom book clubs. We're having, you know, Zoom, you know, tea time with each other or coffee. You know, I think we're just being really creative, and I think we're paying attention if we are living with other people, that we're really paying attention to them as well. And really seeing them, hearing them, enjoying spending time with them. We feel like we're not allowed to experience joy when so much tragedy is happening around us, but yes, we are, because of the both and. And I also just want to say something related to your experience reaching out to your ex. I thought it was so interesting that you said that you were writing a script for some of your partners in the past. I just did a TED Talk recently about how we're all unreliable narrators of our own lives, and we write these stories.
Yes.
And there are multiple versions of the story, but we always are so sure that our version of the story is the accurate version of the story. And so in the TED Talk, I read a Dear Therapist letter, because I write a Dear Therapist column on weekly for The Atlantic. And I read a Dear Therapist letter that I got. And later in the talk, not to spoil things, but I read another version of the letter. And it's happened more than once where I have gotten a letter from somebody, and then the other person involved in the situation also writes me a letter unbeknownst to the other person. And I put it together. And I realized, wait, this is the same story, just told from a completely different point of view. And it's so interesting, because if people could see another person's perspective without feeling so much shame around including the parts where maybe they had a role in the story, maybe they had a role in something not going the way they wanted, maybe they did something that they're not so proud of in the story. I don't hear that part of the story. When people are telling me, you know, in the therapy room or in a Dear Therapist column, they're telling me the story in a way that gets me, or what they want is they want me to validate their version of the story. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that is actually going to help someone is to broaden the story, is to say, we need to write this story from a lot of different points of view. And then we can create a much more helpful version of the story.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your patience with technical difficulties. Thank you for being here. And I would like to know where folks can find you on the internet, and you know, what you think would be a good item of writing or of audio or what have you for them to get introduced to more of your work.
Sure. So they can find me at my website, which is lorigottlieb.com. They can find me on Twitter at LoriGottlieb1. They can find me on Instagram, which I'm still learning how to use, at LoriGottlieb_author.
Ooh, but let me just say, Lori, as your digital marketing consultant, which I just elected myself.
Thank you. I need one.
Well, there are some therapists doing great work on there. And honestly, learning how to make just quotes in a real, with a lovely background, and standardizing that and using that consistently is really lovely, because people will pass that around. It'll be a gateway. I don't want to say a gateway drug, but I'll say it, a gateway drug to the rest of your work. It's very, very helpful. But anyway, I'm very excited you're on the gram.
Yeah, no, I am. I actually did that. I just put up a quote that I thought was really... People have been sending me quotes from my book. So my book is called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. And I think there's no better time for us to be talking to someone. We all need to talk to someone. And so many people have been posting on social media or writing to me through my website saying that, you know, sending me quotes from my book that have soothed them, helped them, distracted them, made them laugh during this time. And so I just started doing that, sharing some of those quotes that everyone's sending to me that I think we should all have access to. So if people are reading the book, they're getting them. But if people, you know, want to get a taste of what they find in the book, they can look at these quotes.
Well, thank you so much, Lori. And again, my deepest condolences on the loss of your dad, and my deep gratitude for the service that you're providing for people, not just your clients, but for your readers and for these internets, these internets is as a whole.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad you're having these conversations. They're so important.
Thank you so much to Lori for that interview. I appreciate it a lot. Thank you so much to everybody who supports this program, patreon.com/Sarah Benincasa. You can get 20% off at Matrushka. They're making masks, they're selling masks, they're donating masks. Also, wonderful clothing that I've been wearing for years, made by a small team of women right here in Los Angeles. You can shop my affiliate link at matrushka.com/code/SARA. That's matrushka.com/code/SARA. And you will get 20% off plus free shipping. If you're looking for some beauty items, my friend Vanessa Minnell has a small skincare salon here in Los Angeles that obviously had to close down, but she still is doing a small retail operation. They've got a lot of organic skincare stuff. You can go to VanessaMinnell.com and you can use offer code CALM, C-A-L-M, at checkout, and that'll get you 10% off. VanessaMinnell.com. And use offer code CALM, C-A-L-M, at checkout for 10% off. I am going to buy some stuff for, I use Dawn Lorraine skincare, which is made in the USA, and it's organic, and it's great, but there's a whole selection of stuff. And finally, if you're into tarot readings by a sensible, down-to-earth, woo-woo kind of lady with sort of a punk rock attitude, who's super funny, you can go to melissasynova.com. That's Melissa, C-Y-N-O-V-A.com. And you can use offer code Polly, P-O-L-L-Y, for 20% off a reading. Melissa is one of my best friends, and she's rad and funny and great. So yeah, you can do all of those things. Melissa's job was furloughed recently. So, and her husband was furloughed as well, and, you know, she's raising two kids. So I was like, damn, dude, well, at least you're an established tarot reader and author of multiple books. So, hey, you got that. We're all using our different talents as we can, I think, right now. I want to send out a lot of sympathy to those of you who are dealing with job loss. Not only the economic hit, but the grief that that brings. We really do need to grieve the process. And when I lost a job years ago, I made the mistake of not feeling the feelings and just plunging right ahead into something new, a new hobby without, and a new attempt at a gig without really thinking about it, without really figuring out my business model, scaling, fulfillment, things like that. So my tiny word of caution based on my limited experience, and I know I'm not going through what you're going through, is if you have lost your job recently, to allow yourself to cry, get upset, to get angry, to feel all those feelings, because it is important and you do deserve to mourn. And I know it may feel like there's no time for that right now, but there is. There's always time to take a moment and have a feeling. And it's good to let it out now and to deal with it as it arises. And if you can't access feelings, regardless of your situation right now, regardless of employment, if you have trouble accessing feelings, I have always found it useful to dip into movies, TV, and music. That helps me when I can't just feel the feelings right away. That is enormously helpful to me. So for what it's worth, I hope that helps you out even a little bit. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm at Sarah J. Benincasa, Sarah, S-A-R-A-J-B-E-N-I-N-C-A-S-A, on Twitter and Instagram. And I have some books out that you can purchase if you want to. I encourage you to use your local independent bookstore, give them a ring, or search for one online that'll ship to you. I love Skylight Books in Los Angeles. I love The Last Bookstore in Los Angeles. I love Malaprop's books in Asheville, North Carolina. Those are not sponsored in any way. I just love them, and they'll ship all over the country. So I wish you the best. Take good care today. Bye-bye.